Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hi.
Try that again. You did not come through well.
Hi.
Dave.
Hi.
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
Sigh. We start every week with good thing. Craig, what's a good thing?
Apparently, Mike doesn't appreciate our opening this week. All right. So this week, my good thing, I think, we're going to do a shout out. We're going to do two. We'll do two things. Two quick things. One will be the one that Mike referenced last week, which is Subnautica Below Zero. I have beaten it. It's pretty good. It is smaller than the original game. I highly recommend the first game, but Below Zero is actually pretty good. They sort of like streamlined and fixed a few things. It is a sequel. It is not an expansion pack. Completely different area. But it has a bigger emphasis on the story, which is good for some people. I wasn't as scared playing this game compared to the first game. Maybe that's just because I'm used to Subnautica and I don't really get scared anymore. I do remember playing the early access when they were like working on areas. You go to like an area that they haven't really developed yet and it's just dark and ominous, and that's scary. There's none of that in the finished game because it's all like, you know, finished and they have stuff to do. They put a little bit more emphasis on land. Like there's stuff to do on land. There's like icebergs and stuff that you can explore if you wish. But they did some really cool things with the artwork and things like that. It's pretty good. It took me about, I don't know, maybe 15 or so hours to complete. I sort of beelined the final couple hours. Like I was ready to change up games just because I take a long time. That's just what I do. Nothing negative about the game itself. It's just that after a couple weeks, I just want to move on and play something else. So I did want to finish the story, though, so I sort of beeline that. There's plenty more to do because there's a lot of base building I skipped out on. There's a lot of things I unlocked where I just stopped building. I'm just like, I'm good. I'm good with what I have. There is a lot to do. It is pretty good. I do recommend it if you're a fan of the first game. I recommend the first game first, just because it's so good and it is spooky. People who have like maybe don't even realize that you have the fear of the ocean. Yeah, that's totally gonna trigger that. But if you stick with it, you'll get better. You'll become a little less scared and you'll be rewarded with quite an experience. So yeah, we'll go with that. And I'm also playing Terraria again. That's my second good thing, because Terraria is pretty good. Although I'm playing the PC version, which has all the latest updates. So I just found out Tori is playing the Switch version, which will get the updates eventually, I hope, because it's really good.
New updates to Terraria? I didn't realize I had new updates.
I mean, it was like 2 years ago.
Okay, the 2 years ago updates.
The 1.4. And actually, they have been doing some bug fixes. So
okay.
We're at like 1.4.2.3 or something like that. They added a new NPC since then. There's a new NPC that can move in. There's some new outfits. Like, a lot of different costumes were added as part of some competition they held. So they added some costumes. And they tweaked some things to... Some nerfs, some buffs, you know. Typical things. Anyway, it's a lot of fun. Terraria is really good with friends. I'm playing solo this time, and it is hard, guys. Like... I miss, because me and my wife played it last time during the big release. It's great, like, having a party, because you have, like, four different classes that you could focus on in Terraria. So having a team, even just having, like, I was the magic user, my wife was melee. Like, that goes a long way, because melee can, there are ways to tank, essentially, that enemies will target her over me. And then I can either work on healing, because it's like a magic, it's a general magic class, so I could do healing, or I could do DPS. It's good as a team, and I had a lot of fun. Solo's really hard. I'm trying to do a magic build, and I'm having some trouble. You have to get good at dodging, like, if you're by yourself. Anyway, great game. Done.
Okay, so the secret to conquering your fear of the ocean is the sea truck.
Always. Dude, you get your Sea Moth, you get your Sea Truck, and then everything's like, eh, I'm not worried. Sea Truck is bulkier than a Sea Moth, so it's like, I feel like I can handle anything with that.
All right. My good thing this week is a tabletop role-playing game system called Panic at the Dojo. Just ran a session zero last night. Went pretty well. Had a lot of fun. How do I describe this? It's not D&D. It's not D20. It's its own thing. There are magical kung fu fights. It's a whole thing. It's fun. And it's like $16 on DriveThruRPG. Panic at the Dojo.
Cool.
Dave, I skipped yours. Good God, I'm sorry.
You're the boss.
I jumped out of line. I'm sorry. I'm not awake yet.
That's fine. All right, so in honor of us being back on schedule for Mistborn Area 2, my good thing this week is going to be whiskey, and specifically Japanese whiskey. I've tried a couple different Japanese whiskeys. I've had Suntory, and I just bought a bottle of Hachizaki. And if you are able to enjoy alcohol responsibly, and you like scotch but don't like paying for scotch, it has a very scotch kind of taste to it, Japanese whiskey. So if you've never tried it before and you do like whiskey, scotch, and you can enjoy it responsibly, then I would recommend trying some Japanese whiskey at least once. That's all. I don't think anyone else in this show drinks whiskey, so I wasn't expecting a lot of feedback on that one.
I don't really drink these days.
I mean, unless I've got a cold and I'm having a hot toddy.
So, Tori, what's your good thing?
So, I've got two this week. I've told you guys before about Ursula Vernon, an author I enjoy, who also writes under the name T. Kingfisher. And I told you about her horror novel, The Twisted Ones. Well, she's got another one. It's called The Hollow Places. And I'm telling you guys about it because today on Audible, it's only $5. That's today. What is this? May 23rd. So if you're not listening today, then too bad. But if you are listening live and you need a good audiobook and you want something scary, The Hollow Places by T. Kingfisher is on is $5 on Audible today. So that's one good thing. And for those of you who are not listening live and you're not with me on May 23rd and you can't take advantage of that really good deal, let me tell you about Bad Batch, which is the new Star Wars TV show on Disney Plus. It's an animated show, sort of like Clone Wars. Full disclosure, I never watched Clone Wars. I am a filthy casual Star Wars fan. But I've been watching Bad Batch.
Oh, man, I haven't even gotten the filthy casual level. I haven't seen Rogue One or Episode 9. I'm done.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I haven't seen Solo. So, but I think that's the only Star Wars movie I haven't watched yet.
I think Rogue One is considered better than Solo, though.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
I hated Rogue One. RIP.
But Bad Batch.
Anti-casual.
It's fun. It's funny. It's if you're a filthy casual like me, then you probably at least know that the stormtroopers are clones, right? Like they were all clones in the past. Later they moved away from the clone thing, but so this takes place before the main trilogy, like during the Clone Wars era. And so the Bad Batch is a troop of these clones that mutated in some way. So they, like, the mutations gave them extra abilities. Like one of them is extra strong and one of them's a really good sniper and one of them is smarter than everybody else. And so they've just put all of these clones in one unit and it's the Bad Batch. And something about their mutation makes it where they don't follow orders unquestioningly the way clones are supposed to do. So at some point in the first episode, they kind of turn on the Empire and they run away. And now they're going through space having adventures. And that's the crux of it.
Solving mysteries?
No, not really. Just getting into shenanigans. And obviously you don't need to have seen Clone Wars in order to enjoy it, because I haven't and I am. So there you go.
Cool.
That was it.
Yeah, sorry, I was eating. I didn't expect you to end quite that quickly. So, Dave.
Yeah. Oh, we're doing the short story wrap-up, right?
No, I thought we were jumping straight into episode.
Oh, we didn't do Castless for Six of the Dusk.
My, well, we can do that later, but my stream says otherwise.
Oh, boy.
Did you not read, Dave?
Well,
do we have a short episode this week?
I cast Woody Harrelson, or no, Jeff Bridges. I cast Jeff Bridges as every character in the short stories. There's the wrap-up. Goodbye, everybody. I did happen to pick up Shadows of Self by Brandon Sanderson. We're back in America here with the New York Times bestselling author. And I think that would have worked better if I let Mike lead in with, Dave, are you sure you've started a new book this week? But, oh well, he wasn't fooled for a second.
I was extremely fooled. I was very, very scared.
Yeah, so based on the title, I thought about the title a little bit, Shadows of Self. It kind of reminds me of the effect of burning allomantic gold, right? You see shadows of yourself when you burn gold. And so far, we've only seen one gold allomancer, that is Miles. So that's kind of interesting. We did get a villain return in this book already in chapter two, but it wasn't Miles. So yeah, I'm trying to just kind of dissect the title here. Shadows of Self maybe it refers to someone burning gold. I don't know. I will savor this exciting escapade as instructed by which one is it? Publishers Weekly. Yeah, fantasy fans will savor this exciting escapade, and I will savor this book in every sense of the term. I'm not going to rush myself through it. I'm going to take my time and enjoy it thoroughly. Because I have to. And also looking at the cover here, Wayne needs a haircut. Got some long curly hair. Doesn't have his buzz cut and his bowler hat like he did on the first cover. So kind of weird. All right.
Actually, can we pause for a second and take a look at the art that Craig has up on his stream?
Sure.
So it's fan made. I don't know who the artist is, but I actually use it as a wallpaper on my computer, and I'm like, I want to use this, because I try to find covers that don't have any words on them, and it's unfortunate that I can't really get any for Shadows of Self, but someone did do this awesome artwork, so shout out to whoever they are.
I'll probably find out and credit them next week.
I quite like this, except for one thing. Can you guess what that one thing is?
There's no cravat?
No.
Oh, Wayne has a gun.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it doesn't look like he has a dueling cane.
It could be a dueling cane with a gun pistol handle.
It could, except that it's
a boomerang.
Yeah. It's like 5 inches long. Anyway.
He's just holding it for wax, maybe. Or that maybe that's like it's like a Pez dispenser with his gosh dang. What's that metal that he burns? Bendalloy?
Yes.
Yeah, could be his Bendalloy Pez dispenser shaped like a gun.
Craig, can you link the picture in the Discord? Because if I try to open your stream and record at the same time, my laptop will explode.
Sure.
All right. So while they're doing that, yeah, it's actually Marassi on the cover, I'm assuming. According to this back cover, Marassi, Wax, and Wayne actually were for the Constabulary Tory. Well, funny thing was when I bought the trilogy, like I bought all three books together, I thought that because Wayne's not on the cover of this book, I thought that he might have died in the first book, but whatever. I guess they'll just put anyone on book covers these days. hint, Brandon, put me on a book cover. All right. Ready to get into the prologue?
So ready.
Okay. All right, so the prologue is actually, it's a flashback. It's kind of like an origin story wherein we get to learn where two of our favorite characters meet, Wayne and his hat. All right, but they spend, for an origin story of Wayne's hat, they spend a lot of time talking about Wax and Lessie, so whatever. Okay, so we have a flashback of Wax and who I thought was Wayne and later turns out to be Wayne, shortly after Wax became a bounty hunter after 5 years of clerking in the roughs. What do a barkeeper and a farukimist have in common? Everybody? A barkeeper? and a Ferrucamus. They're both tappers.
Dang it! I was thinking like, something about tapping, and
yeah,
I'm about to jump in.
Okay, it's better when I embarrass myself, according to Mike. All right. Granite Joe, Waxillium can't afford to go in the hole. That's literally what going in the hole means. And Lessie, oh, that's to add on to a flashback of Ann Lessie. It's a trap, which means the cravat is working. Wax shoots a piano forte and produces three discordant notes. Lessie says, can we stop talking about when I was a dancing girl? Wayne, get the horse. Looks like I'm gonna have to jump. Hello, Joe. Lessie starts to shoot one guy, but then shoots the other guy. Wax intends to change things out here in the roughs, and Lessie is sure that Wax will teach a lesson to all the evil pianos out there. Looking at you, Mario 64. Looking at you. There's an evil piano in the world. It is in Big Boo's haunt. All right, so this is, I guess Wax had only recovered one bounty, and Lessie's just like, you're the guy? How'd you catch that guy? And basically everyone in this town and everyone in the tavern, it belongs to Granite Joe. He's a Kolos-blooded villain, and even Lessie is about to turn on Wax, but then she doesn't. And she's like, if I shoot Wax, I have to shoot everything he stands for, and I want to believe in the good of mankind, or something like that. There's also this line about how Wax slam, he's like, oh, I can't afford to go in the hole again, but like, going in the hole means that you can't afford it, so I didn't really, and plus he could just save money on lavender cravats probably. So he's like, so to Wax, his reputation and his shtick as the gentleman bounty hunter are like more important than actually being good and making money. But you know, the fact that they set up this trap for him, you know, it kind of proves that his reputation is getting out there. And here's a piano. Let's see. So yeah, this isn't the first time that Lessie and Waxillium have met, but this is the first time they actually have a conversation and start to get to know each other. And then eventually Lessie shoots Granite Joe, and that's the basically the end of the prologue. Oh, the end of the prologue is that Wayne found that is suddenly wearing a bowler hat. Yeah, and he's just like a kid in this episode. Was he like 14, 16 or something in this episode? In the prologue?
I think they said 17.
17. So yeah, somewhere between 14 and 16.
It was like 17 years before present time, so however old he is there.
Oh yeah, chapter 1, 17 years later.
How old is Wayne?
That would make him like 34 in present time.
It says he was born in,
I'm inclined to believe,
3010s.
Now, I might have been thinking of that 17 years later thing.
He's 11 years younger than Wax-ish. 11-ish years.
Is that like dog years?
No. Scadrial is pretty much as close to Earth as you're going to get in the Cosmere.
So what's an ish year?
Well, that's because we don't know when Wayne was born. It has nothing to do with Scadrial and everything to do with Wayne never telling the truth.
You said that Wax is 11-ish years older than Wayne.
Fine.
But what's an ish year?
I have to clarify. Wax was born in 299 post.
You have to clarify because
Wayne is born roughly around 310.
Wayne wasn't born in the roughs, or was he? Maybe he was. All right. Maybe Wayne was born roughly. I'm not sure actually where he's from. Any questions about Prolog?
Hey, Dave, you excited to be back on Scadrial?
The only thing that could make the return to Scadrial better is a cameo of Sylphrena and Nightblood's wedding.
Okay.
They're both swords. They're made for each other.
I think you'll find that Nightblood was made to destroy evil.
There's no way I'm the first person to ship Sylphrena and Nightblood. Someone else has to have come up with that. All right, it's not that weird. But I don't know. I'm not allowed to look up fan art.
That's okay. I'm on it. I'll get right on that.
If not, then part one. Chapter one, 17 years later. But why not 16? 16 is the number of preservation. I think there's a little missed opportunity here.
Missed opportunity.
We're not making that missed joke again.
I am, and you can't stop me.
I can mute you.
It'll still show up in the recording. You're not my real dad.
All right, 17 years later. What kind of name is Winsting? So it's like every name is almost like a real name. They're really close. Like Winsting almost sounds like Winston. Wexilliam almost sounds like William. And then we get Ed Warren Ladrian. It almost sounds like Edward. But like every name's basically just a real name minus one letter in this era. Ed Warren.
You gotta make it more French. Ed Warren instead of Edward.
They don't have any. I guess there is no D in France. Okay. Winsting is a zinc boy. Ed Warren Ladrian. Flog sure dresses like Wayne. He's got the duster and the hat, then the Ruff's hat. I don't know if we'll ever see this guy again. I don't know. Bribery and shooting and. Oh, wait. I was supposed to sing this line. All right. And then Winsting is loses stung. All right. I'll sing it. Bribery and shooting and shooting and bribery tonight. Everywhere there's a bribery and a shooting and a bribery. All right.
I love that.
That's enough of that. So chapter one is told from the perspective of some dude named Winsting, who's like, I don't know, the mayor's brother, and he's quote selling art, but really he's selling political power. And you know, in order to hide the fact that he's selling political influence, he's quote selling a painting or something, and it's terrible, and everyone knows it's terrible, but everybody knows you know what they're actually buying. And then Winston gets shot or something. I don't remember. He dies a little inside
and outside too.
From the outside in, Winsting is stung.
Don't you mean his throat is slit, not shot?
Yeah, that happened.
Well, who can say? There was shooting, though. And so he was going into hiding. And so Flog is this guy. He's like his bodyguard that might secretly be Wayne. I don't know. It's just kind of like if you go to watch a movie, there's always like, all right, so it's like, you ever see a James Bond movie where he's always just like finishing up a caper that isn't necessarily attached to the story proper that we're getting into? I don't know. This might be that. I don't know. I don't know who this guy is. Could turn out to be alive.
That's probably important.
Could turn out to be a Chandra. I don't know. But I do suspect this Flog guy of being Wayne.
Chapter two,
proceeding directly from chapter one.
I got to clarify something here.
Okay.
So basically, anyone who could be in this disguise is either Wayne or a Chandra. Okay. Let's keep going.
Yeah, that's how disguises work.
That is.
that's a slogan for this era. You thought I was another guy, but I was Wayne or a Chandra.
It's like, remember book two, Well of Ascension? It was like, find the Chandra. Now it's find the Chandra / Wayne. There he is.
Can Chandra be Allomancers? We talked about this in Era 1. We know that they couldn't be affected by emotional Allomancy, at least not like the watered-down genetics. Like in further generations of Mistborn, they weren't strong enough to control the Chandra.
Emotional Allomancy would just essentially take over their mind.
Yeah, but it was strong enough. Didn't we had like a specific line that was like Chandra can't be Allomancers or something. Like it was actually explicitly stated, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe.
Maybe Tensun said it.
Tensun walks us through that.
Okay, what if they have a hemallergical spike? Could that give them Allomantic powers?
They have hemallergic spikes. That's how they work.
Yeah, but they can have more than two or four or whatever. They have the two that make them a Chandra plus the two of the specific blessing they're supposed to have. Is that or something like that?
No, they only have two.
Does Kolas have four? I thought Kolas
have five, I thought. Or is it four and you're now spiking the human?
No, I think it's five. I can't
remember.
I won't spike human. He's my favorite Kolas. Is it five? Whatever.
Sorry, he's spiked.
Okay. Wait. What didn't Tensun like leave spikes like and hide them in a little alcove somewhere?
Yeah, he had extras.
Like additional spikes. So he had extras. I guess he had extras from Ursur.
Yeah.
And he hid those somewhere. Okay. They were like the Blessing of Might or whatever. Like the Paladin spell.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Conjurer Spikes give them sentience, but also give them one of, I think, four different blessings. And
correct.
when he killed the other guy, he kept those spikes, and then he had an extra blessing.
So did Tensoon have four spikes simultaneously, or did he swap them out? And like Tensoon, if I recall, they took his spikes away when they imprisoned him, so he still has like his consciousness as a Mist Wraith, right?
No.
Or did he not?
He like hid them outside before he went into the Chondral homeland.
Okay.
The extra ones.
Okay, so while Tensoon was pretending to be Ursur, I believe he was using all four spikes at once.
Uh-huh.
And then on his return to the Chondral homeland, he hid the other two spikes.
Yeah.
Okay. But when he had the Blessing of Might from Ursur that helped him play Sonic and Tails with Vin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
because he needs his own spikes, that's who he is. But he got the extra might to.
We're getting into some existential stuff. Like, is the Chondra the Mist Wraith, or is the Chondra the spike? Is this some deep existential?
Ooh, deep.
The Chondra is the Mist Wraith.
Do you actually want to know? Because I could give you an answer if Mike lets me.
But I thought when Tensoon was in prison, didn't they take his spikes away, and he was just basically a blob? Or did he have
his
spikes
and
was forbidden?
Away.
Yeah, they took his bones away.
Yeah, they didn't take his spikes.
Oh, that's right. They had bones. I forgot all about the bones.
Because if you remember, the resolution or whatever it's called is removing their spikes, which essentially kills them.
Yeah, the unpluginating, yeah.
Yeah. The spikes essentially staple their soul to their physical self. Like, it basically ties everything together. Otherwise, it's just a Mist Wraith. That's just a blob.
Are Mist Wraiths like of the spiritual realm, and then like the spikes give them physical realm-itude?
Mist Wraiths are physical bodies what's the race called, guys?
Chondra?
No, the race of
Terrors.
Yeah, so they were the Terrors.
Well, the first generation.
Right, but it's their bodies that they had their cognitive and spiritual selves removed, so it's just this mass, you know, this physical body that has nothing attached to it. And the spikes allow the spiritual and cognitive to tie back to the physical bodies that they have. So the Mist Wraiths are just a body with no mind or soul.
Whose cognitive and spiritual selves are they? Do they get their own back, or do they get whoever got spiked? Do they get
I think that's a good question, because we don't know. We know that the original first generation, it's definitely the Terra Stewards. Like, they actually had memories of the Lord Ruler before he was Lord Ruler, which I'm forgetting his name as well.
Rayshak?
Yeah, that's the one. So they have memories of. So they are definitely the same one. We don't know about the future generations, though. We don't know if they're like a new soul or what. Okay. It's weird.
Did they procreate and make new generations, or did like Rayshak just create like new Mist Wraiths out of nothing?
No, the Mist Wraiths became a species and could procreate on their own, and
the generations are basically, we have permission to get more spikes or something for new generations.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a lot of talking about Mist Wraiths for two chapters of a book that may or may not contain any Mist Wraiths. So let's go ahead and get into chapter two here. All right, so we start off with a history book. Says Hemallergy is good now. Renette probably won't try to shoot wax at his wedding, which is more than can be said for most of his family. Steris is trying to sabotage her own wedding for funsies. Wax's exploits are a matter of public record, and he has nobody to blame but himself and his cravat. Douglas Venture. Wayne doesn't trust the butler. Gee, I wonder why. Morassi drives the conversation and suspects Wax of making a horrible life decision. Marks is a regular child murdering Robin Hood. As I recall, Bloody Tan was not the man who killed Lassie. Bloody Mark. So we got a caper. So it starts off with Wax. He's reading this book, which I guess is kind of like the maybe the Bible sort of for his religion. He's a pathetic, right?
It's a Pathian.
Pathian, right. So, and I remember he had the earring, so, like, there is definitely hemallergy involved with his religion, so, and this book is, like, a letter to...
Yeah, that was a spike given by Harmony, Virachandra, to...
Mark. Yeah, but this is, like, a, but this text that he's reading is, like, a letter to Sazed about how, like, hey, we can, you know, we can do good with hemallergy, right, Sazed? Because you're, like, Harmony, you're, well, like,
so
Ruin Andra.
About Pathian... The Pathian Bible, in my interpretation, Pathian is sort of somewhat similar to Buddhism, and so there's no real, like, text.
Okay.
I mean whatever Sazed wrote.
Like, maybe they don't have a sacred text, but they'd have writings related to their religion, I presume.
So, someone
like, they wouldn't hold it in same regard as scriptures, but, or the Quran.
Someone trying to convince Sazed that hemallergy is good is somebody else that's not Harmony. Trying to convince Harmony what's good. So it would be not opposed to Pathian, but it's not the same.
Let's see, there's some kind of history book or religious text about hemallergy and how the person, the author, whether I don't think they're writing to Sazed, but they do mention Saze. And it's obviously someone familiar because they say... They call him Saze, you know, like, for short. So it's obviously somebody that's familiar with Sazed, possibly, like, Spook. And it has to be after the time of Harmony, because Sazed is Harmony. And
Catacender? Is that the word?
Catacendra.
Cataclysm.
Yep.
But anyways, I don't think we actually know to whom the letter is written, but, like, I mean, it's some kind of history... Or perhaps religious texts that's arguing in favor of hemallergy and how it can benefit humankind.
It's not a letter so much as a journal.
Okay. Oh, maybe I'll look it back at, but probably not. All right. So Steris and Wax are all engaged and stuff, and Steris is setting up the wedding and trying to figure out whom to invite, and she kind of. Man, if you remember from the first book, she kind of got off on, like, being kidnapped and rescued and rescued and kidnapped tonight everywhere there's a rescue. Like, she's definitely trying to invite guests to their wedding that will cause a ruckus because she's into it. Like, that's what I'm reading from Steris in chapter 2.
No. You are misreading this. She is planning... for every single contingency, and she knows that something's going to happen to her wedding, because, of course, we have Wax involved, we have William involved, something's going to happen. So, if she can create a controlled situation where she knows it's an easy situation that Wax can handle, that would be a better interruption than some unplanned, unknown event. She is making it happen. So,
right.
She's
so what you're saying is, something's going to go wrong. Let me make sure that something simple goes wrong instead of something. It's kind of like she's kind of like building in a circuit breaker to her wedding.
Yes. That's exactly what she's doing.
I feel like her logic is a little bit flawed.
I also think that she just wants something exciting to happen. I'm still gonna say that's possibly a secret motivation here, even if she doesn't explicitly state it.
Okay, stuff exploding around Wax is to be expected. That part of her logic isn't flawed. Intentionally introducing something to explode to cover that is the flawed part, because that doesn't.
Yeah,
that
why
doesn't
can't
remove...
two things explode?
Yeah, that just basically guarantees that two things will explode.
Yeah, but so at any rate, for whatever the reason, Steris is trying to invite at least one volatile guest to their wedding, and she's like, "Will Renette try to shoot you?" And he's like, "Probably not. If Wayne's there, she'll probably shoot Wayne. But maybe it's just for funsies." All right, so Wax's exploits are a matter of public record, which is why Steris knows that stuff is always going to explode. We have this mention of Douglas Venture. I forget the context with which he's mentioned, and I don't know if it matters, but I just wrote it down because he has the name Venture. And that was Elland's last name. So I wonder if he's a descendant of Straff or Elland.
Well, if he's a descendant of Elland, it would be Vin's child, and Vin did not have a child.
Yeah, remember, they both
died.
Well,
there was that other time. Although that lady was killed. So, yeah. Okay.
That is true. Straff did make
That's
him.
That's true. It would not be Ellen's descendant. That's correct. Okay. Burr, 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 burr. Wayne doesn't trust the butler. Remember the last butler that tried to explode him? All right. So they're like, oh, we got to start this caper. Marassi's driving a car. Wax doesn't like cars. And then the villain's name is Marks, who was kind of like beloved by, he was like a town hero. He was kind of a scamp, but then he killed a little girl during his last adventure. And now he's on the constabulary's radar, but the town is still kind of loyal to him. And then they chase him out, and then he's like running to the sanctuary of the people that will cover for him. And then as Wax is chasing him down, he sees somebody that he thinks is Bloody Tan, whom if you recall, the prologue of Alloy of Law, he'd been shot in the forehead. So what's going on here? Probably a Chandra. Yeah.
Does Marx have any brothers?
Which one is it?
Does Marx have any brothers, or are any of them grouchy?
They're all Marx men.
Groucho Marx, perhaps?
What was Mike's question? All right, pop quiz. Who's the best Marx brother? Or who's my favorite Marx brother? Can you guess?
I mean, it should be Groucho. He had all the best lines.
Anyone else have a guess?
No.
Harpo. My favorite Marx brother is Harpo. So, like, you'd think I would like Groucho Marx because I'm all about, like, the fast-paced wit and all. So, like, I get it, like, and Groucho Marx is definitely, like, a comedic hero of mine because of his wordplay. But there's just something about Harpo Marx who he kind of takes, he takes slapstick to, like, a really cerebral level. And you're just, like, it's not just, like, silly and stuff, but like the physical comedy employed by Harpo Marx is just like, it really makes you think. It's kind of weird to say that, but like, it's a physical comedy that makes you think, and it's just like, it's not just funny, it's also clever without using a single word. And like, I really admire that. As somebody who depends on words, I can really appreciate the humor coming forth from somebody who doesn't use any words. But my second favorite's Groucho. Anyway, anything else happen in this chapter?
I think you actually got to the end of it.
I got to the end of it, but did I miss anything?
I don't know. Probably.
We'll sure talk about it in spoiler time.
Oh boy. Goodbye then.
So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen.
And thanks,
and
for,
thanks for all the fish.
Dave's gone. Play the thing.
This concludes the spoiler-free section of our podcast. If you are, as I am, reading along for the first time, we recommend that you stop listening now, as the following will contain spoilers for not only this book, but for other Cosmere books as well. There may also be general spoilers from any other source material. Spoilers begin now.
All right. Craig, you wanted to gush about Steris as soon as we kick Dave off.
Spoilers? Only people who are part of our Discord know about that. And hey, if you want to be part of the Discord, you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/CosmereCast, and there will be a link to the Discord there. So come join us, chat about things, and you can see what will be spoiled in the spoiler section. Okay.
And you can also give us money, which we appreciate.
Okay. So right here, chapter 2, for me, was the moment Steris started becoming one of my favorites. Right here is where you see, like, doing a reread of Alloy of Law, like, you can see a little bit of her personality come through, but it's really here where she's planning her wedding and like, okay, we gotta invite some enemies of Wax just to create a situation. Like, this whole thing right here is just so endearing. And it's so typical Steris. Right here is the moment, the beginning Now, Stars didn't fully win me over until she saved from the train, which I think it's this book. It is this book, right? This is where they go off to that other city that's sort of out in the roughs. Either way.
I honestly don't know. Every time I've read this book, I immediately jump to the next one, and they're the same. Like, it's all one.
That's like Wall of Ascension for me. Wall of Ascension and Hero of Ages. So right here, Steris is so good. Like, there's so many good things about Steris that are super well done. Like, she's definitely a part of the group, and that is revealed later on where she tries to, like, sacrifice herself, so to speak, or at least put herself up as a hostage. And it's sort of like, no, you have qualities that the group needs. We need someone. We need ops. We need someone who can handle all the different details of a mission so that way it goes seamlessly. If you just leave it up to Wax and Wayne, they're going to go in guns blazing and there's going to be a lot of destruction. Steris is the planner. She is the ops in the background. We need her and she should be protected at all costs. But she's so endearing. And as was mentioned in the Discord, she actually is on the autism spectrum. And from what I've heard from not only in our Discord, but from others on Reddit, she's actually a very good representation of someone who happens to be on the spectrum. So shout outs to that, to having that kind of representation, because we need a variety of characters. And it's good to have that. So well done. But yeah, I think she's perfect for Wax, by the way. Like, I ship those two forever. Forget Marassi. Like, no, she has her own thing going on. She's not good for Wax. Steris is good for Wax.
Poor Marassi.
Need someone stable.
Forever alone until she meets her mysterious masked man.
Yes, in Bands of Mourning.
Yep.
Okay.
So Tori, Dave had a question that we didn't really answer for him. Can a Chondra use allomancy?
Gosh, I wonder if that will ever be answered later in this book.
I like how we all just didn't say anything. Like, what was it? Chondra can't use allomancy? What was that, guys? And then we, like, went off on some weird tangent. Like, yeah, let's just go in that direction and not answer the question.
So the answer is no, except in the rare cases where the answer is yes.
More specifically, Palm / Bleeder / Lessie / whatever the heck she wants to call herself. Oh, by the way, also apparently she has bloody Tans bones. She can use some allomancy and furcamy because of the one spike. Because she only has one spike. The one spike she has, which we suspect is made out of a god metal. Probably trillium. Who knows? But it's definitely not a normal metal that Chondra would typically use. And somehow it's giving her allomantic and ferrochemical powers.
Here, stick this piece of alien metal in you. You'll get superpowers and not cancer. Promise.
We know. So Palm was a decent Chondra. Like, she was definitely useful to Harmony until, like, the whole thing with Wax happened, where basically Harmony's like, you need to die, because I need Wax back in the city, in Ellendale. So she definitely legitimately cared about Wax. And just to have to do that to him definitely messed with her head. And that's, I think, the start of when she goes down whatever path she follows that ultimately leads to only having one spike, going against everything Harmony is and says. And yeah.
Ooh, I've got a question I thought of just now, so I apologize if there's a word of Brandon out there or if this is said and I just missed it or forgot. But so in the prologue, they make a big deal about how, oh, you were the dancing girl at that other way stop. Was the dancing girl the Chondra, or did the Chondra happen to the dancing girl afterward?
You're saying Lessie was the dancing girl?
She's wondering if the dancing girl was just a regular human girl who got Chondra'd.
That's what I'm wondering.
And I would lean toward no. I would lean toward Lessie being placed as the dancing girl to get Wax's attention. And then that didn't work, so...
I think Harmony knows Wax well enough that that wouldn't be the approach they do.
Does he at that point?
Wax has been a follower of Harmony for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, but has Harmony been following Wax?
Yes, because he was looking for his quote-unquote sword.
Okay, but was Harmony just following Wax, or were there a lot of options that sort of narrowed themselves down over time?
I mean, look, we know Harmony, Sazed, he probably, although he doesn't have his copper mines anymore, I'm sure he's very good at memory. I mean, he holds a shard, so I think Sazed slash Harmony could keep track of all the details, and he could totally, if he has multiple candidates, I'm sure he's following all the details of all of them, and he would know what works. I think it's just a coincidence. I'm going to go with coincidence, which never happens in these books, but I'm going with it.
New idea. What if Harmony wasn't necessarily calling all the shots here? What if that was Lessie's idea with the instructions of get Wax's attention?
I'd buy that.
Because, like, I don't know that Sazed necessarily feels the need to micromanage quite that much.
I think, in fact, he doesn't micromanage. I don't know. There's definitely some things he does with the Conjure that he doesn't do with anybody else. Like, it's specifically because the Conjure are his, like, right hand. But he doesn't control Marsh. We know that. Like, Marsh is doing his own thing. For the most part, the Conjure seem to do with whatever Sazed says, but I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know if they're, like, to that degree that Sazed will do that. Because that doesn't seem like the thing Harmony would do.
No, I'm picturing Conjure Lessie over here, like, I'm going to be the best dancing girl at, like, I'm going to get his attention. I'll show you. And then, like, dang it, that didn't work. Okay, now what do I do?
Yep. Anyway, I like that theory over Sazed had the wrong approach in the beginning. Maybe it was just Lessie trying something else out and it didn't work.
Okay, what else do we have?
So basically, we're going to read through this book and, like, everyone is going to be suspected of being a Conjure in some way. So we know...
Or Wayne.
So we know in the prologue, Lessie, of course, is... Okay, so just to recap, for those of you who are coming in like Mike, or like this book blends with the next one, the big thing of this book is that we have someone called Bleeder, who is up to some sort of shenanigans that we don't quite know about, but there's, like, a bunch of murder and stuff like that. And we find out, of course, that Bleeder is a Conjure called Palm, who happened to also be Lessie, who was his love that we see in the prologues of both of these books so far. And he eventually marries her. So it's, like, it's a big deal. Like, he's very attached to her. And he accidentally, at the time, it seemed like, killed her in the prologue of Alloy of Law. But it turns out that was definitely planned. So in this prologue, we have Lessie. In chapter one, she took over the bodyguard, Flog, I think. Like, I think the bodyguard was her, and that's how she kills the rich crime lord dude. Politician, crime lord, whatever.
Potato bribery.
Sure. And I don't think she's in chapter two, but wait, is she?
Bloody Tan.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She possesses Bloody Tan. That's what I was going to mention. Yeah, that's the one. She has Bloody Tan's bones. And I think someone in our Discord mentioned a theory that maybe Bloody Tan, like, in the prologue of Alloy of Law, maybe she already had Bloody Tan's bones and was controlling both herself and Bloody Tan. So, because it looked like he moved her to be in the position of the bullet, so maybe she was already controlling his bones, but I don't know. He's later executed, so I'm not quite sure if that would work.
I mean, I think it's just a simpler explanation that she moved herself in the path of the bullet.
Yeah, but somehow she still has his bones, so that's weird.
I mean, shovels aren't expensive, dude.
You don't think he would just be thrown in a mass grave? He was a criminal.
Okay, shovels aren't expensive. It's been over a decade.
Now I'm picturing all of this trial and error. Like, was it these bones? No. Let's try the next set.
Hey, I gotta get this straight so I could be a cameo in one little section and mess with Wax's head.
If there is one skill set that I'm absolutely certain that all Conjure have, it's assembling a proper skeleton out of bones.
Like, they get a look at a set of bones and they're like Legos and they're like, I know how this goes together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, separating out, oh yeah, these all belong to this one set. I can tell because of the pixels.
You know what? So, I can't say his name. Hemijah?
Himeja.
Himeja. Do we make that a Y or is it a J? I don't know anymore. But there, he says there's a Chandra in charge of keeping track of their bone storage. You know what? It's totally possible that Chandra just get bones from, like, executed criminals and other things. Because why not? It's like free bones. And they don't typically kill people anymore for their bones. Because that's not what Harmony would do. But you still need access to bodies and stuff.
They weren't killing people for their bones before. That was a rule.
That's true. The person who bought the contract has to supply the bones. But yeah. Still, the point is that I don't think we're out murdering people to get bones to give to Chandra. I think they can just use bones that are given to them.
Shovels are not expensive, man. I'm saying.
Okay, sure.
And, I mean, wouldn't a Chandra just keep a shovel in them just to have?
We'll ask Milan about that.
And now I'm picturing, because my imagination is apparently very active today, now I'm picturing a bunch of Chandra oohing and awing over some new set of bones, like they're collecting stamps or Pokemon cards or something. Like, guys, guess who I just got? Oh my god.
So hold on, Tori, going along with that, is there a big, like, underground trade? Like, black market for bones? Like, you know, I have this set. He was a constable back in the day. I want your surgeon.
I will trade you that constable for this corrupt politician. What do you think?
I think that Chandra, if they ever made it to Earth, would be paleontologists.
Chandra be dinosaurs?
I mean, eventually. But first, they have to be paleontologists.
Yeah.
That's true.
Lick okay, the bone.
They'll dig up a set of bones like, all right, let's see what this used to look like. And they'd put it together and it would have no hair, but hey.
Unbeknownst to us, the Chandra are already on Earth, and they're those people that reconstruct the dead from the skulls, you know? Oh, how did you do that? With all the clay and the digital art? And it's like, yeah, it was totally from clay, and that's how I did it.
Okay, new headcanon, the show Bones. Every character in that is a Chandra, and it's in the Cosmere. Yes. Hey, quick question. What's Kelsier up to right about now?
He's ruling the Ghost Bloods.
Okay. Where do you suspect that he is right about now? I have an idea, but I'm curious to hear.
So, we know that the events of Stormlight Archives that we've read so far happen much earlier than what we're reading in the book. There has been 300 years since the whole big Mistborn Era 1 until now, roughly 300 years. We have an idea of what Kelsier did for, like, the first, 10, 20 years, because he was busy helping the South Pole Skadrians.
Well, first he haunted Spook, and yes. Then Spook got him a body.
Yep.
Not 100% clear on the specifics there, but it involved stabbing the body with a spike through the eye.
They were trying different things out, see what would stick.
And apparently that was the thing that allowed him to staple a cognitive shadow to a corpse.
More than likely, I mean, the cognitive and the physical are sort of close together in terms of the realms that he, I think it's a literal stapling. Like, Kelsier stood next to or on top of the body that they were using with a spike and, like, let's see if we can staple myself to this body. That's exactly what they did.
That's kind of how I picture it, too.
Yeah.
I would like to actually then, get that, but yeah, that's how I picture it so far.
Maybe both Spook and Kelsier, or just Kelsier went off to the Southern Skadrians and helped them out, because Harmony wasn't doing anything.
I'm guessing that. Just Kelsier, because Spook has to rule the recovering people.
He's Lord Mistborn.
Yeah. He finally got a title that freaking Elend wouldn't give him. Dude asks for one thing.
And he wanted that title so he could get a girl, and he already had the girl by then. So...
Okay, but it doesn't mean he doesn't stop wanting the title.
He gets the girl and then gets the title to show you don't need a title to get the girl.
Oh, deep.
So, yeah.
So he helps the Southern Skadrians. He creates the Bands of Mourning. And then at some point he establishes the Ghost Blood so that way he can figure out how to leave the planet.
I'm assuming that he's camping out around Harmony's shard pool.
Like, at that point or currently?
Both.
So you think he has not been able to leave the planet yet?
Yeah.
I think... See, it's really tied together with whatever's happening in Stormlight Archives. It depends on, number one, if they can figure out the Oath Pack, and number two, if the Ghost Bloods can get the proper information they need to give it back to Kelsier so he can leave his planet.
Or if the Oath Pact has literally anything to do with why Kelsier's stuck. They might be completely separate concepts.
No, they are, but the Ghost Bloods think they're going to get something out of it, which is why...
Yeah, they can be wrong.
Yeah, oh yeah.
They can think that, and they can also be wrong. Do you think Kelsier has a bird?
Yes.
I bet Kelsier has a chicken at this point.
If Murray's has one, there's totally no reason he wouldn't have an AVR.
Wonder what kind of chicken. Wonder what his chicken power is.
I don't think he would go in for a Copper Cloud one. I think he'd go for something interesting.
Well, he's still a Mistborn. That, I assume, didn't stop being a thing. Like, it has to still be a thing, otherwise he can't Bands of Mourning.
Hold on. I think he's a Mistborn, but I think he's a Mistborn through the Hemallergic Spikes. Wait.
No.
I think he kept... very much, though, because yeah. Otherwise Harmony would be able to know where he is and take control of him.
Well, I think Harmony knows where he is, and I think Harmony could take control of him, or at least influence him. I don't know that he has more than the one spike. I'm assuming he still has all of his Mistborn powers from when he was alive, because that's not tied to his physical, that's tied to his spiritual.
Yeah.
And he has to be a Mistborn, otherwise the Bands of Mourning can't exist. Not sure where the ferrochemical portion of that came from, so we gotta figure that out. So
Spook didn't have access to that. Seiza wasn't giving anything up. Do you think Marsh helped him with the ferrochemical portion of that?
Maybe.
Because Marsh has access to ferrochemy.
Okay, so Marsh, at the end of Alloy of Law, tells Wax that he's been doing his brother's work.
Yeah.
And we know that Wax is primarily Harmony's tool. So are Harmony and Kelsier working together?
Because it certainly sounds like at the end of Secret History, they weren't going to work together.
Well,
Kelsier has the weight of the words. He has like an 18 charisma. He could totally convince Seyzed to help him out.
So the thing that Seyzed wasn't going to help Kelsier with was getting a body.
Yes.
But once he solved that issue, I don't know that Seyzed still has a problem with like working with him.
That whole sequence bothers me. Why is Seyzed not willing to help Kelsier? Like, okay, so the big thing that we have discussed is in any other book series, Kelsier is more of a villain than he is a hero.
Oh, super duper.
Maybe, you know, Seyzed knows that. No, I mean, doesn't know the whole meta concept, but knows that Kelsier's intentions and how he operates is probably more aligned to ruin than it would be to preservation or to harmony. So knowing what he knows after picking up both shards, he knows Kelsier is going to be difficult to deal with and control. So I'll let him figure things out. I'm not going to help.
Counterpoint.
Which is still a little weird to me because they're friends.
Counterpoint. Post, good God, Pits of Hassan, Kelsier.
Yeah.
Was still doing villainous things, but with good intentions.
Yes.
Which suggests that he had grown as a character.
Okay.
Which suggests that he theoretically could continue to grow as a character and start doing good things with good intentions.
Okay.
So what if he has? What if post cognitive shadowing he's turned around?
Counterpoint to that,
Ghostbloods.
The Ghostbloods are not up to any good. They definitely have some ulterior motives. They definitely follow the ends justify the means philosophy. That to me doesn't sound like a good person is their leader.
Counterpoint. The Ghostbloods aren't doing evil necessarily. They're doing, from the perspective of people on other worlds, selfish things because they aren't helping with their particular deal. But they're not necessarily bad.
I don't know. I just remember they killed the cart that was carrying off Shallan when she first tried to join the Ghost Bloods. That's not cool. But that's such a Kelsier thing to do when he was running his thief group. I mean, they were less about murder until the Pits of Hassan, and he started killing all these nobles. But
well, he didn't really have.
I don't know. I don't think he's changed that much, but. Going along with why Seiza didn't help him in the first place, maybe that was intentional because Kelsier had to discover things about hemallergy, like Kelsier and and Spook had to discover things about Hemallergy in order to create... Well, man, that's not about Hemallergy, but in order to create the Bands of Mourning, they were experimenting, is my thought. Or it's Kelsier and Marsh were experimenting with Furukami and Kelsier and Spook. Either way, the point is, maybe there were things to be discovered, and Seized not helping Kelsier was in order to forward that path. Like, just giving them the information, which is sort of Seized's problem, because he's like, I could just give the technology, but that doesn't help solve anything. People have to discover it on their own. And when he created the Ellendale Basin, he sort of stagnated the technological progress a little bit.
I have issues with that we will discuss later.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm thinking the don't give Kelsier a body thing is just an extension of Seized's sort of more hands-off approach to sharding.
Okay.
But
you think they're working together now?
I think they might be.
Do you think Harmony is part of Kelsier's crew? And more importantly, is Kelsier going to put a crew together of a bunch of shard holders?
Probably not. To both. Like, Kelsier might consider Seized to still be part of his crew. Right. Like, I don't care that you now hold two shards. You were on my crew before, you're on my crew now.
That's true. Do we agree that Kelsier would not work with Autonomy?
I don't know. We haven't really seen much of Autonomy as a person yet. Right. So it's hard to make that claim.
I remember the thing, I forget which book it is in Era 2, the thing that is attacking Scadrial that Harmony is trying to, you know, prevent. I think Kelsier, I would hope, is against that, because he wouldn't want his planet destroyed or taken over.
Well, we still don't know for sure that that's Autonomy. Especially,
yeah, that's
given,
there's some force.
Especially given what we know happens in Rhythm of War.
Yeah.
Like, that could just be Vargodium.
It could also be a Dawn Shard.
It could be... What if Vargodium learns how to make avatars from Autonomy?
True. We don't know. We don't know a lot of things.
The more important question... This is from Sword Nimi. The more important question is, will Kelsier punch Teravangian in the face? And I hope the answer is yes. I hope that also.
All right, off-the-wall theory. What if Teravangian deals with Autonomy in some way and takes up her shard? And so now we have Odium combined with Autonomy.
Right, because Race was the one that wanted to preserve the purity of Odium.
Yep. I don't think Teravangian would do the same thing. I think he would totally combine shards. More power.
What if Kelsier takes up the shard of Mercy?
I could see Kelsier. So we were told that there's one shard that just likes to survive. There's no survival shard, but one of the shards just wants to survive.
But we still have one unnamed shard.
Right, but we were explicitly told there's no shard. There's no survival shard. I suspect it's invention. I think that's one of the shards.
Well,
but
okay.
That would be a perfect shard for Kelsier to hold, because he is very much in tune with that whole survivor type aspect.
There's a survival shard in terms of intent, but not name.
Right.
Which, given that the name is generally also the intent, that goes into I've gone cross-eyed.
So I'm not convinced that Kelsier would pick up a shard, or if he has access to one after the whole preservation thing. He knows of ways, because of there's that whole connection orb that the Eyrie was using. So he knows a lot of things. I'm not...
He's been a shard holder already.
You know, I'm changing my tune. Maybe he does pick up a shard eventually. But yeah, I just want to go with what I mentioned before. Odium and Autonomy with a single shard holder, whatever that combination is, I think yes is incredibly scary, because you'd have someone creating avatars, because it's that whole autonomous principle, but they'd all have Odium as their intent, as it's, yeah. But like all the questions we've had about like who's attacking Scadrial, or if we look at, you know, First of the Sun, it's like who, like the Pachi. However we say that, Pachi is an avatar. of something. And it's always like sort of like, oh yeah, that's an avatar of maybe autonomy. Like, it's sort of like, it's never explicitly said, yes, this is absolutely an avatar of autonomy. It's that this is an avatar, and the only one we know who makes avatars is autonomy. But what if someone else picks up her shard?
Or, I mean, there's no reason to think that that's a thing that only autonomy can do.
It's just very much her intent.
I mean, it's a thing that autonomy has done, we think, but that doesn't mean that nobody else can do it. Like, Sazed probably wouldn't, because he's fighting himself and barely has control of what power he has.
But what I mean, it's in line with their intent. Now, we could talk about a new shard holder, because they're not so beholden to their intents. They have some flexibility, so yeah, I think Odium, now held by Taravangian, can probably make some avatars, because that's that he knows that's something that people could, well, once he learns that information, I think that's something he can do. But like someone like Endowment, for example, they've been shard holders for so long that they're basically the intents. So if the intent doesn't line up with making avatars, they're not going to make avatars.
Sure, but it doesn't mean they can't.
Yeah, it's just that they won't.
Or let me restate. It doesn't mean that that shard's power isn't capable of doing it. It does mean that they can't, because they're so beholden to the intent.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, we've gone actually pretty deep here. I like it. This was good. Anything else? Anyone got anything else? Tori?
Nope.
Craig?
Nope.
Cool. All right. Let's go ahead and end it here. So, bye, everybody.
Bye, all.
Goodbye.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at CosmereCast, or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.